Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Off the Cut episode 20, which is respectfully dedicated to the food tapioca?
Tapioca.
Is that a food?
Yeah, kind of.
I thought that was like an ingredient.
It's like a pudding. My girlfriend likes tapioca, actually.
Huh. But I know up in Canada, today's better known as Tuesday, June 28th, 2022, and I'm sure he's not listening to this, but my good friend Byron, it's his birthday today.
Oh, nice.
So happy birthday, Byron. I'm sure you're not listening to this because I don't think you listen to this. But hey, if you are, we can't talk shit about you. I already got
Oh, yeah, explicit. There's the explicit right there.
Less than a minute in.
Do you think any of your friends listen to this podcast?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I think I've had a couple of my friends, like one of my friends mentioned that he listened to a couple episodes, but he's not even like a woodworking guy or a DIY guy or anything. So I think he's just kind of listening to be nice, which I appreciate, but I don't really expect any friends or family to listen to this.
No, if I had to guess, I imagine that the only thing that people I know of actually look at is maybe like Instagram.
I think my people who know me in real life might actually just watch my stories and then like not mess with anything else that I do.
Yeah. What flavor did you just crack into over there?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I should have said this is a nice grapefruit bubbly right here.
Not grapefruit. This is raspberry.
Oh, raspberry.
Yeah. This is for everybody at home. Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. So crisp.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Is it incredibly hot in Ohio today?
It's not too bad. Okay.
Okay. But you got the beach outfit on, so I thought maybe you were a couple
degrees warmer. I just realized I still have my sunglasses on my head.
Who's the Casey Neistat's the YouTuber who does like every video wearing sunglasses.
Always has sunglasses on, huh?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Huh. But what we got? I got nothing on tapioca. I don't even know what tapioca is.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about tapioca. Tapioca is like warm pudding, I think. It's rice-based?
It's a starch extracted from the storage root of the cassava plant, a species in North Brazil.
This is all too complicated for me.
Yeah. All right. I'm just going to go out on a limb and just give this one a hard pass.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this about tapioca. I've had it a few times. It's got one of these textures that kind of grosses me out a little bit. It's kind of slimy.
Like coconut water.
Oh, man, I cannot stand coconut water. I don't know how people...
I like coconut water.
Do you? It's like thicker water. There's something about it that I just really...
It's like sludgy water.
Yeah, I can't wrap my head around it. For some reason, it just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, so for me, coconut water is solely what I'm looking for. Drink? I don't know.
Like a hangover remedy?
Yeah.
I only drink
like coconut water and stuff like that if like I'm hungover or like feel really dehydrated.
Yeah.
Same with Pedialyte.
Yes, Pedialyte is like Gatorade essentially, right?
Yeah, but it's like ultra super duper concentrated Gatorade.
It's in case your baby gets diarrhea, you're supposed to give them Pedialyte, I think, right?
Yeah, or if yourself had too much alcohol.
Yeah, or if you're a grown man who just happened to tie a few on last night.
Yeah. Half a bottle of Pedialyte at night, the other half in the morning. You wake up feeling like $100.
Yeah, my friend used to take a bottle of Pedialyte and like a Tylenol and an Advil when he went to sleep after a night of drinking.
A bottle of Advil.
No. Sorry.
Oh,
a bottle of Pedialyte and an Advil and a Tylenol.
Oh.
I don't know if I misspoke or.
Maybe I misheard it, but I was like, dude, a bottle of Advil? Like, I'm pretty sure that would kill you.
He was a little suicidal. He was a little emo.
unless you get one of those like gas station bottles of Advil that has like three pills in it and they charge you like $7 for
it. Such a nightmare. I've fallen for that so many times. You're like, oh yeah, I need a little Advil. I'll get some at the gas station. Comes in this little vial that's like 3 inches long and an inch wide. You're like, there's got to be 20 in there. No.
Was it like five?
Maybe five if you're lucky.
Yeah. And they're probably like the 25 milligram ones. So you're like, well, I literally have to take five of them.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I used to do that. So I used to take like somebody gave me an Advil. I'd be like, oh, it's a regular one. You better give me like three or four. And then I was like, do I actually need to do this or am I just destroying my liver? I've kind of dialed it back. And now I'm like a one regular strength Advil guy because I was worried I was doing damage to my body.
I mean, I'm the kind of person where I'm pretty stubborn. So like I rarely take like Advil or anything like that. I'm like, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even tell you what we have.
I'm not a big cold remedy guy. Although I will say when I had COVID, I took DayQuil and NyQuil and that really helped. That took the edge off.
So have you any issues since you that was what, like 4 to 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, I would say something like, maybe even a little bit longer, maybe. Yeah, the listeners will tell us. nothing. Yeah, it kind of sucked when it happened, but no, you know, lasting symptoms. I had like the littlest cough for like a couple weeks afterwards, but yeah.
Did you have COVID when you did your voiceover for that Everything console?
No. Oh. I don't think so. Maybe because
I just watched that. Did I have?
And
it was
like
3 weeks ago.
Were you like, oh, Zach sounds a little raspy?
Yeah,
a little
under the weather, maybe.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe it's possible. Did you like your little cameo at the end of that video?
Oh yeah. Oh, I saw the cameo at the end. I left you a good comment. I was like, I've heard about this video for months and months on the Off the Cut podcast.
That's nice. I'll pin that to the top so people see it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, and then I was like, yeah, I enjoy the video too. But I was trying to give you a comment and plug the podcast, get that two-for-one going on.
I like it. That video is finally starting to pick up a little bit of traction. It's one of those ones where I posted it and like didn't really do anything for 2 weeks. I was like looking at the stats, like click-through rate is great, like average watch duration is great, but it's still not doing anything in terms of views. And then it's been picking up over the last few days.
I saw you change the thumbnail several times because it was in my subscription tab and I kept going, oh, I'm going to watch that. But I'm like, wait, I got to wait till I have 20 minutes to sit down and watch the whole thing because I want to make sure I give you a solid playthrough the whole time.
That's the downside to most of my videos are a lot longer. And I have a lot of people like, oh, put out a video on a certain day and they'll send me a message like, oh, I'm so excited for this. I'm going to watch it on like Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I realize it's a double-edged, like if you make really long videos, YouTube likes it, but then users have to like actually find chunks of their schedule. It's like not something you can watch on your lunch break or something like that.
True.
Yeah.
Dude, I finished that dining room table.
Oh, nice.
It's done. It looks sick.
Yeah.
Right now, just a soft edit where I would say I'm probably like 85 to 90% done with it. And now I just have to do my voiceover. Yeah. You know, I'm at 59 minutes.
Yeah.
I think this is, I told you I wanted to try to make this one long and very dense.
Yeah.
Dude, I think it's going to be like at least 40 minutes long.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So what's taking up so much time in it? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do is give a lot of like tips and tricks and explanation and not just be like, then I ripped the boards down and I glued them up.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, you know, when you're doing this, like make sure you swap out this blade and like, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And like, you know, don't put too much pressure here. Like make sure the boards don't bow. Like try to give a lot of explanation because a lot of people seem to really like the tips and tricks embedded into projects.
Yes, I'm personally very appreciative of them. And I try to include as many as I can in my videos. But I'm actually going to try. So it's funny you should say that because I'm actually for my next video, I'm going to try and go the opposite direction where I'm going to try
crazy fast.
Yeah, I'm going to like breeze over a lot of stuff. I'll be like, and then I cut the body on the CNC, you know, and then like, and then me cutting this something that took like an hour in real life is just going to be like two second video clips.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see.
I did that for the last couple videos of mine. Like, they've been fairly short. They've been like that, like 9 to 12 minute length.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they did just as well view wise, but the watch time was a lot lower.
Yes.
So I don't know if that hindered me.
Well, that's the thing. YouTube's weird because they don't, watch duration is very important.
Yeah.
So, because I've had short videos that people watched like 75% of, or something like that. So it was like, say it was an 8 minute video, my average watch duration is 6 minutes, which is good. But then I'll do another video that's 20 minutes and I'll have like a 60% watch duration or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube will give you like a little thumbs up if a video is doing better than normal.
Yeah.
And so it'll give me the thumbs up on the longer video where people are actually not watching as much of it. And it'll give me the like thumbs down or whatever, or the nothing on the one where that's shorter, but people are watching for longer. So I think there is something in the algorithm that prefers a longer video, even if people aren't watching it through to completion. That makes sense.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too. But if you think about it logically, it's not possible for you to get that thumbs up on every single video.
Yes.
Because at some point you're going, so you get a thumbs up on, did you get more views than the last video?
Yes.
Okay, so theoretically every single video can get more and more views. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Watch time, or actually let's hit click through rate.
Yeah.
Can that theoretically go up every time? Oh, you get to an upper limit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right? Theoretically, I guess you could always, you could get to like 99.99, 99.9999, and just keep adding nines on the end of it. But realistically, like, you are going to hit an upward limit pretty quickly, too.
And for the most part, I mean, if you find a video that for a long period of time is between 5 and 10% click-through, like, that's solid.
Yes, yeah. Like, if I have a video that's, especially so at a certain point, you'll realize your video is now reaching a wider audience. It's not reaching your subscribers. You'll see like a big uptick in views. If you can keep your click-through rate around 5%, if I can keep mine around 5% after that hump happens.
Oh, going to the moon.
Exactly. Then I'm quite happy at that point.
Yeah. But then the last one is watch time. Dude, you can't keep that growing. You would start having to putting out videos that are hours and hours and hours long.
Yes. Or, you're right. You would have to keep,
Right. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. You could just start, you know, Eric Reads the Encyclopedia, A to Z.
Yeah. So I've actually thought, like, if I ever had to make a channel that was just completely out of left field, dude, I think I would do one of those things where people like go to the beach, set up a camera, and just record like the ocean for like 60 minutes. And then you just put it on loop and do like a 12-hour video of the ocean.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, why not? People would put it up in like the background of the restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
Doctor's office, waiting room, like that type of thing.
And how easy would that be?
Dude, there's this guy in my city who just walks around the city with a GoPro strapped to his chest and uploads that video. Today, we're going to walk around Chinatown. And he just walks around Chinatown, no editing, no commentary, just walking down the street, and he uploads that. And I don't know, I think he's got 20,000, 30,000 subscribers or something like that.
He's probably making, you know, at that rate, I have no idea how many views he's getting on these videos, but he's probably breaking in a couple $100 a month.
Yeah, a couple. I mean, if you're just going for a walk, you're putting zero effort in. Like, say you're just a person who likes to go on walks.
Yeah, I just went on a walk today. Could have monetized that walk.
Yeah, exactly. You should be filming it. Come on, man.
Damn. Hey, I was meaning to ask you, is your YouTube views, are they way down right now?
They were way down earlier in the month, but they're slowly picking back up a little bit.
Mine are kind of the same. I was just curious if it was everybody was kind of seeing it with it being the summer and whatnot.
I would say definitely my views kind of peaked around January, February. Then they kind of went down from there, and they're up a little bit from the trough, but they're still not great compared to what they were in the wintertime. But so many of these things, I don't really know it's so hard to know what, like, maybe I just put out a couple stinker videos. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
I always default to assuming that it's me, myself, doing something wrong, and it's not some external factor, you know what I mean? Because if you assume everything is related to some external factor, then you can't really do anything about it. But if you're like, my last couple videos were really crappy, I should try harder on the next few.
Yeah, or that like, you just, let's say, hypothetically, you haven't put out videos in 3 months. Well, of course your views are going to be down. Like,
exactly. And I did also have a couple, because I got COVID, I had a couple weeks where my production schedule got messed up. And I was like 3 or 4 weeks late on my normal schedule for a bit. So maybe that had something to do with it. It's really hard to know. There's so many variables.
Yeah. But you know what is a nice variable that we got today?
What's that?
We got new patrons.
Oh, baby.
So I told you about Jessica Lopez last week.
Sure did. Our first female patron.
Yes. However, I've been meaning to tell you something about Jessica. And, you know, things got out of control last week and we just didn't have time. Right?
Uh-oh.
So for everybody who doesn't know this, I'm a big bird guy. Big pigeon guy. Right?
Like the Sesame Street character? You're a big fan of Big Bird?
Yeah, that was actually one of my nicknames in high school. I think I told you that.
You did tell me that. Yeah, you did right? tell me that.
So I'm a big pigeon guy. Collect pigeons. I like to pet pigeons. I like to photograph pigeons.
I can't
even eat pigeons. All right.
Okay, you're definitely messing with me at this point.
And so I do a lot of pigeon weddings, a lot of photography for pigeon weddings. And anyway, long story short, got into a little bit of a legal dispute with a local aviary, okay? Mm-hmm. And I've been searching around for a litigation team. I needed some help. And someone who really knows their stuff when it comes to bird law. And I found Jessica Lopez, who is nationally recognized as one of the best lawyers in aviary disputes, right? Graduated top of her class. And when you go to get your, law degree in bird law, they actually give you a golden pair of wings like they do when you go on airplanes as a kid.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, Jessica and I are in court together and she's absolutely dominating the courtroom, you know, smacking her hands around, yelling real loudly, making everybody just look like an idiot because she's real smart.
Obviously.
Lots of yelling. Tons of witnesses getting cross-examined and everything. And during her concluding statement, she gives her final words. And Zach, are you ready for this?
She said,
Eric should be let free so he can spread his wings and fly. And then she releases a dozen pigeons in the courtroom and everybody stood up and clapped. The judge immediately dropped the charges and honestly, I couldn't be happier with having Jessica as my lawyer. That's a true story.
So, what is the backstory to this joke? Did Jessica send you like $10 on Venmo to say that?
No, we said last week that, you know, you always know these patrons, right?
Oh, yes.
And I didn't know Jessica, so I felt like I owed her a story.
I forgot you said you were going to make up a story about how you knew her. All I could think, are you an Always Sunny in Philadelphia fan? All I could think about was the episode.
Oh, yeah. When Charlie's like, yeah, you know, I know a lot about law. Bird law.
Bird law, yeah.
Well, we also have another new patron.
Okay.
Mark Scott.
Oh, nice. What's up,
Mark Scott? Do you want to hear about Mark Scott or do you want me to tell you about him next week?
Yeah, tell me about his, how he's a practicing mole doctor next week.
He's a mole doctor?
Yeah. Okay.
I had a story for him, but I'll save that story for someone else.
What about our top tier returning patrons?
Oh, yeah. Our top tier returning patrons, Corey Duvall and Scott Eastman at EC's Woodshop, still returning, helping us out, as well as our other patrons. But, you know, if you want your name on every episode, you got to got to be a top-tier patron.
Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what. You don't get your name read on every episode, but you do get access to every single after show.
That's true.
If you become a patron.
And for those people who decided, 19, that's not my number. You didn't want to listen to last week's episode. We gave the after show to free. God, we gave the after show. This is going off the rails. To everyone for free last week. So if you go on patreon.com/offthegutpodcast, scroll down to episode 19. It's free. You can check out the after show. Get a little taste of kind of what we talk about. Had a lot of we had a great conversation.
We had a great time. Yeah,
we don't want to spoil it though.
Yeah, I got a couple DMs from people saying that they're getting a lot of ads for caulking guns now, and they think it's related to the after show from last week.
Yeah, yeah, big caulk guys over here.
A lot of power caulking last week.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't want to get taken off the air here. We're talking about C-A-U-L-K.
Yes,
just so we can be clear.
Hey, we already got the explicit warning on this episode, so I think we're free to talk about whichever cock we like.
Well, so there's something else I want to talk about, and here's a genuine thing that's been driving me nuts.
Okay.
It's been driving me nuts for several years now, all right? And I'm sure you've experienced this as well. Have you noticed within the last 5 to 10 years that when you go to shake someone's hand, you never know what kind of handshake they're going to go with?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, are we talking just the standard, like, business handshake? Or, like the thing where, like, you wrap your thumbs around? Or, like, the thing where you, like, you smack your fingertips together and, like, I never know what to do.
Yeah.
Or the fist bump?
The fist bump. You know what? I found a lot of people lately are just transitioning to fist bump because COVID, right? It's like a little germ thing.
Yeah.
But you know what I haven't got in many, many years, and I'm very thankful for it, is the person trying to crush your hand. They're trying to give you the power shake where they're like intimidating you. I remember getting that a lot in like the early 2000s, and it's just like completely dropped off the map now. So I'm thankful for that. But
you got to tickle the guy's palm if he gives you one of those.
I am deep down awkward, introverted person.
Yeah.
So I feel your pain when it comes to like the, you know, people go for the handshake and then it transitions to a hug or it's
Yeah.
You go for the handshake and it's like a side hug type of thing. There's so many different variations on it. I wish we could all just get on the same page.
Well, so, and the reason I brought this up was because we were at the pool this weekend, had a bunch of friends over, and one of my friends, she was like, hey, do you, I don't know the relationship status. I'm just going to say boyfriend. She goes, hey, it doesn't matter, right? She goes, hey, do you care if I bring my boyfriend? I said, not at all, bring him over. So, like, I'd never met this guy or whatever. And then in my head, I'm thinking, well, damn, what kind of handshake are we doing? Are we going to do, like, this, like, I don't know what we're doing. And so what happened is I went in for just a classic, let's call it the business handshake, just your typical handshake. And he was going for that thumb lock thing. So it just turned into this really awkward fumble. And then I think because of that, then he went in for that like side hug, kind of like shoulder bump thing. Yeah. Oh, dude, it was a train wreck. Train wreck.
I remember once when I was like 13, I was going to meet my grandfather and I met like my grandfather's friend and he stuck his hand out to give me a handshake and somehow I missed his hand. Like I just went overpass and I ended up grabbing onto his like forearm a little bit
and then
he went along with it and he grabbed my forearm and we kind of did like a forearm shake. It was... I died a little bit inside. I really kind of pulled into myself like a turtle in that moment.
Yeah. Well, see, where I thought you were going to go with that is now every time after that you've met this guy, he went and like shook your forearm.
No, thank God I never saw him again. One time I think I saw him walking down the street and I crossed to the other side of the street just so I wouldn't have to have another awkward handshake. You're like,
oh, I got to turn around here.
Yeah.
But this is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. How do you avoid these awkward handshake moments, right?
I'll give you another one. The when do you hug people?
Mm.
So on Sunday evening, I was with a bunch of my friends and I dropped my friend off to meet his wife. So I haven't seen his wife in a while, and she's there with their son. So I give him, I give her a big hug. I give the son a hug, and yeah. then she's with her friend, and she, you know, just first time ever meeting her. Give her.
Ooh, I see where you're going.
We do a quick handshake. It's fine, and then we're all there for like 5-10 minutes talking, and then it's time for me to go again. I give my friend a hug. I give my friend's wife a hug. I give their son a hug, and then we're be talking for 5-10 minutes. Do I hug her friend? And it's like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Was she cute?
Yeah. And
go for a hug.
And she's hugging everybody too, right? Like we're kind of doing this round of hugs, and it's just like me and her at the last minute. We're like, oh, I don't know. What do we do here?
Yeah. I feel like in that moment, you just got to own whatever decision it is.
Yes. Yes.
So like when it comes for you to exchange pleasantries, if you want to go for the handshake, just as soon as the two of you make eye contact, just shoot that hand out.
Yeah.
If you give it that like awkward exchange of like, we're just going to look at each other and be kind of like, then it's worse. You just got to own whatever you want.
It's so true. It's so true. And for me personally, I'll hug my friends that I've known for a while, but I'm not most physical person. Like I'm not hugging everybody on the street. So I don't know, but I'm kind of naturally a stoic. So how do I approach that situation in your opinion? Do I just like take a step backwards?
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. It's
good. Like if you want to go for the handshake, you can go for the handshake, but what if you just prefer no contact at all?
Well, do you just like cross your arms?
Yeah, but then you're like a weird standoffish guy, and you're like, next time I see my friend's wife, she's gonna be like, oh, my friend really hated you last time. She thought you were
really rude.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, dude, I don't know. And so, like, I still don't know. Like my sister's boyfriend, they've been dating for I don't know, year and a half. Mm-hmm. I met him plenty of times. Great guy, but like. Even then, it's just like, do I shake your hand or I just say like, see ya, and just like nothing at all? Like, right. Do I hug you? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's tough. It's tough. But like, I mean, with him, I don't know. If he's going to be in the family, I guess you got to start making an effort to go for the hug and stuff, right?
Yeah, but so like even my sisters, I don't hug my sisters. I hug my parents. But I don't hug my sisters.
Oh, and okay, all right.
I think it's been so long now that if I would try to change that role, I think it would be awkward.
Yes. What about the kiss on the cheek? I feel like I could never execute a good kiss on the cheek.
Oh yeah.
It happens sometimes.
It's kind of
like
a grandma thing to me.
Yeah, or like one of your mom's weird friends or something like that.
Oh, the one that tells you that I've known you since you were this tall. And you're like, lady, exactly. I still don't know who you are.
Yeah. What's your name? Like, yes. Yeah. I've had that situation a few times.
I think the only way around it is just to like forcefully put out what you want. So like, if you want a hug, just as soon as like you step into that person's bubble and make eye contact, you just start grabbing, man. You just go for it.
Just start grabbing meat.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, that sounds like some after show stuff. Oh my God. Well,
but no, you know,
dude,
I don't know. This is why I'm a woodworker, YouTuber, because like I come home, I edit my videos, I go to the workshop, I work alone. Mm-hmm. I don't have to deal with these like interactions. I feel like if I worked in an office setting, maybe I'd be a little bit better at them because I would have more practice, you know. You get to shake 300 hands every year, but as is, I spend most of my time alone.
Yeah. You know what I do hate about having the day job?
What's that?
Is, yeah, so I work from home. We know that. I have to join all these like Skype calls and stuff, and you know, I refuse to turn my camera on. I always tell people that my laptop is in a drawer.
Yeah.
So I've never turned my camera on.
Nice.
And so I'll join these meetings. And I'm usually the guy who's like, 10:30 meeting. I'm going to join at 10:30 because I don't want any of that awkward nonsense talk before the
pre-meeting
meeting
discussion. Oh,
yeah. I don't need that.
Worst.
And so I join and then it'll be like one person's in the meeting. And of course, the one person that's in the meeting is the guy that you're like, oh, I don't want to talk to you. And so let's make up a name, Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Jerry. Yeah, perfect name. Yeah. Perfect.
Jerry is there, and he goes, "Hey, Eric." And you're like, "Oh, what's up, Jerry?" He's like, "How was your weekend?" And you're like, "Dude, come on,
Jerry, come on." Like, you just like you should just say nothing. Like if your camera's not on, just act like you joined the meeting and you went out of the room to get a drink or something.
Yeah, that's not bad. I've also done the thing where what I'll do is like if I join in and there's just one person there, I'll leave the meeting and then and then join again and leave. Again and leave and do that like three or four times.
Technical difficulties.
Exactly. And then I'll join like a minute late and I'll be like, oh gosh, sorry, I was having a terrible time joining.
I had a meeting with a brand last Friday, who cares? And I joined like 10 minutes late because Microsoft Teams was putting me in like a sign-in loop. I had to like keep signing into my account and it wouldn't let me in. And I thought it was just a meeting between me and the PR agency for it. But then I join and all of a sudden I only see like two names. In Teams, it just shows you a couple bubbles. But then I noticed at a certain point, there's like 15 people in this meeting and it's a meeting with the PR agency, the brand. And I just started like, I just hopped in the meeting and started like, shooting the shit essentially with the people there.
Yeah, sure.
And then I realized they're smack dab in a meeting that I'm like 10 minutes late for and I'm interrupting the whole thing.
You're like, hey, what's up, asshole?
Yeah, exactly. What are you idiots doing?
Zach, there are 15 people on this call. Yeah.
I assumed because I was the quote unquote talent, the meeting revolved around me, but it really didn't.
You probably just came off with a real strong personality and they're probably like, man, this Zach guy's just owning it.
Yeah. This,
we like him. He's spicy.
That's why we pay this guy the medium bucks.
Yeah. He's grabbing meat everywhere he can.
Yes. Come in, he's shaking hands, he's grabbing meat, he's doing a great job.
Oh. Speaking of meat, I got a question I was meaning to ask you.
Ooh.
And yes, our patrons do get top priority of questions, but the people who get even higher priority in questions are the two of us. So... My question is, actually, I want to save that for the after show. Never mind. Okay. I'm going to pick another question. Okay.
Okay.
K. Corey 77, finishing, period. Any tips for glued joints?
There we go.
Question mark. Final sanding grit? Question mark. Do you always use pre-stain?
Oh, okay.
Can I jump in? Actually, no, never mind. First one, any tips for glued joints?
Yeah. Have a damp rag on hand at all times. Yeah. I've started doing this now for any glue up. I have a damp rag on hand. I just, instead, you know, a lot of people wait to the end and then scrape off the glue. I'm a much bigger fan of just wiping it off with a damp rag.
Getting it right at the beginning.
Get it right at the beginning. It's so much easier. I just did a couple panel glue ups before I came on the show and I wiped the glue off. It was great.
Well, on a panel glue up, for sure. Like, if you can get in there easy sanding, go for it.
Yeah.
Another one is, like, let the glue set up maybe, like, 15 to 20 minutes so you get that, like, almost kind of, like, icing, jelly, peanut butter type consistency.
Yeah.
And then just take, like, a putty knife and just kind of, like, push it in there and pull it out and then go back with a damp rag. I found that works pretty well, too.
Yep. Yep. That's definitely a good option. I don't know. Other glue up tips. Too much glue is... Yeah, way better than too little. Like, just go overkill with it.
See, I disagree.
Oh, really?
For, like, a panel glue up, go wild. Because you can easily get that. But if you're, like, throwing together something real tight that, like, you can't get in there to clean it up, you don't need as much glue as you think you do.
That's true. That's true. I mean, assuming it's well, like, jointed, then you're not going to need a ton of glue to get the stuff to go together. Mm. But trying to think if any other little... handy little glue up, not really for like a panel glue up, but maybe if you were assembling some shop furniture or something like that, get a little CA glue and do a couple dabs of CA glue between your wood glue and then use that as kind of like a clamp to hold the wood glue while it sets.
I've done that before.
It's a nice little, I've done it, you know, making shop jigs and stuff like that, or something that I want to, you know, bang together pretty quick. I don't really care how great it looks. yeah, I'll do a couple little dabs of CA glue, activate it, smoosh it together with some wood glue in there, and then the CA glue will hold it for the 20 minutes that it takes for the wood glue to dry, and then once the wood glue dries, you're good to go.
So for me, I feel like the only time I think about doing something like that is if it's more of like for like a shop project or jig. Yeah. For some reason in my head, I feel like this is just made up. I tell myself like, oh, you couldn't do that on like a panel glue up for a piece of furniture. But you absolutely could.
Yeah, you probably could. You probably could. I should try that sometime. The one thing I do find though is sometimes CA glue will spread into the grains of the wood a little bit and stain.
Yeah.
So you end up with like kind of like a circle around where that CA glue blob was. Yeah. That's like a little darker. But yeah.
You know, we're not making heirloom quality pieces.
Exactly. I'm just making stuff that I'm going to throw in a fire at some point later in life, I assume.
Yeah, we make our money from making the content, not the piece. Yeah,
exactly. If I got a little flaw in my thing, I just aim the camera in the other direction.
Oh, yeah.
Go, baby.
Who cares? Final sanding grit.
Depends on the finish.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you got to just whatever the can says, you know, maybe look online on a YouTube video. I've found some people, like, I think Odie's oil says 220, but some people say you get a better finish if you go up to like 400, 600. So do a little research and see what people recommend. But 99% of the time, whatever the can says is great.
Yeah. So like what I use on the dining table that I just finished, literally I finished the project and I put finish on it too. That was words there. But
what did you use, if you don't mind me asking?
I use that vesting stuff that I told you about. Those are effectively Rubio monocoat.
I still got to get in touch with them because I need to find a new finish pretty soon.
Yeah, that Zach guy I'm pretty sure his name is Zach. I know I sent you the info.
You did,
He'll definitely send you a bunch of stuff.
Although I just realized all that info is now deleted because your Instagram account was deleted.
Oh, just message me. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That tells you not to sand past like 120 or 150.
Wow.
Or something like that. Oh, dude, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's... as a maker, that's super convenient, right? Like, don't
have phenomenal.
To... Get to save yourself some
time. What I do for that stuff is the same thing I do for Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
Hit it with 80, 120, 150.
Yep.
And then I put the first coat of, we'll just say Rubio oil, whatever the hell. It's all the same thing. Put the first coat of oil on there. Let it sit for 10, 15 minutes. Wipe it off. Then let that cure for like a day. Assuming that you use like the accelerator hardener stuff with it, which I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
After just about a day, get a red maroonish Scotch-Brite pad, which is like effectively like a 300 or 400 grit, give or take. Sand the whole thing with that Scotch-Brite pad until it has like an even hazy, cloudy look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Then take just like a dry towel. Try to wipe all the dust and stuff off, whatever. And then I'll put another coat of that stuff on there. Done.
Okay, a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
One, just a little procedure thing. Will you throw the Scotch-Brite pad on your random orbital sander?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, save
if
a little bit
can.
Of time.
Yeah.
Why not?
Go faster.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then my other question for you, you might not know this because you're not a chemist. Can you double up on the amount of accelerator that you use in order to get it to set up quicker?
I don't know.
I've always wondered this. And same thing with epoxy. You know how it's like two part? Like, can you mess with the hardener and potentially have it go off sooner or not later, I guess?
My concern would be the workability time.
Yes.
Because even when I did this whole dining room table that was like about 6 feet by 3 feet, I was spreading it fast with the squeegee and then buffing it in with a Scotch-Brite pad as I was, like, the white Scotch-Brite pad. Dude, once I got towards the end, who's out there? new neighbors. Sorry. Once it got towards the end, it started to definitely not be as easy flowing as it was at the beginning. And it even tells you on the can, like, don't mix more up than you can evenly apply in like 15 or so minutes. if you use the hardener.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. So, yeah. So, because I'm hearing you're saying 1 day for it to cure.
Oh, yeah.
But that's like a full cure, or at least cure to the point where you can touch it. But it's not workable past 30 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. Honestly, okay. It's dry to the touch in maybe an hour or two.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Yeah. So the accelerator definitely helps. I think they say like full 100% cure is like 5 to 7 days.
Okay.
But it's like 75 to 80% cured after like 2 days.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. You know what? It's funny. I actually had a complete tangent. I had a call with one of the lead R&D people at Ecopoxy the other day because I'm working on a project. Yeah. And so I made this list of like 20 questions about this product that they have called Biopoxy. And I was just like, we recorded the whole thing. I'm not sure what I'm going to use it for, but it was really nice to have it. It was nice to have that kind of access to, like, this guy was new as everything there was to know about epoxy. It was really interesting.
Biopoxy 36 laminating epoxy resin.
That's right.
I'm bio-based.
That's right. So I'm getting ready to do my second skateboard build. And instead of using wood glue to laminate the wood, I want to use epoxy so that it permeates into the wood and makes it A, water resistant, B, a little bit more flexible, and C, a little bit more durable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it'd be the same idea where you put epoxy between your laminations.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Huh.
So I had all these questions for him because technically bioepoxy is not meant for laminating wood. It's meant for laminating composite materials.
Yeah, like carbon fiber is what it said, and fiberglass. Yeah,
exactly. So I was having a conversation with him. He was like, you know, I can't say it's going to work for sure, but there's no reason it wouldn't work type of thing. It's kind of like an off-label use for it. So it'll be interesting. It'll be fun.
On their page, it says it's designed specifically to create composite parts, coating wooden boats.
Yes.
Carbon fiber, wet layup and repair, molding, and vacuum bagging.
Yeah. So it'll go on the outside of a wooden boat, but they don't know if it'll go between layers. They suspect it will, but they're not sure.
It says it's a woodworker's favorite. It may be used for wood laminations, coating, scarfing, strip planking, as well as bonding in form of fillet joints.
Huh.
Something, something.
Wait. So it says wood lamination on the site?
Yeah, the very first thing.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe this R&D guru that I talked to didn't really know as much as he let on. Interesting. Interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Is that a new product? I've never heard of it.
It's not very popular. I think it's relatively new, and it's not something that's kind of going around in the woodworking world. So they were kind of, I actually emailed them to say, hey, I'm looking to laminate some wood. Do you think this product would work for it? And so they were kind of excited that I was going to use it for like a new product segment.
So the one that I'm probably familiar with is their Flowcast, right?
Yes, which I have a ton of and I love that stuff. It's great. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I dig
it. I also have another project coming up where I want to make, you've seen those wireless chargers that you put your phone on, right?
Oh, yeah.
I want to encase one of those, like take the crappy plastic housing comes with, take that off and then put that in epoxy so that I have like a clear see-through wireless charger.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And I was talking to them and I was like, is there any issue with heat dissipation? Like what kind of heat capacity can this epoxy take before it starts to break down or discolor, anything like that? And again, it was one of those things where they're like, we're not really sure what the upper limit is. Like around 100 watts, it starts to discolor. But like, does the wireless charger, is it going to put out 100 watts before the rest of the block can dissipate it? So it'll be one of those videos where I'll kind of do it and I won't be sure that it's going to work when I start the video.
So I like that idea. If Ecopoxy is sponsoring it, it could be potentially problematic. Like hypothetically say that you do this and you're like, yeah, this failed.
Yeah.
If they're sponsoring it, potentially be
bad.
But I think that's the beauty as far as content goes. Like if you're going into something having no idea if it's going to work,
exactly.
Say it.
Yeah.
And people will. And if it fails, people will love to see why it fails.
Yes. Yeah. And for reference or whatever, they're not actually sponsoring it. I had the guy on the phone and I was like, let me ask this guy about this other idea that I have for their other product while I have
Yeah.
So I think it'd be fun.
I said, go for it.
Because I want to try, and like if that works, there's a whole bunch of other things I want to try encasing in epoxy. I was thinking, you know, like maybe I could make a see-through computer case out of epoxy or something like that, or a speaker case or something.
Why not just use acrylic?
Acrylic is, you could use acrylic. I mean, it would be a little harder. You would have seams and stuff, whereas if you did it out of like a solid block of epoxy.
And then like carve it out.
Yeah, something like that. Or even, I don't know, like I was thinking like, so what about if I could pry the back of my phone off? And then I could encase it in epoxy. Then I could lay it in a tub of epoxy so that just the bottom of the phone was submerged in the epoxy. Oh. And then I could carve off all the excess and I would have like a perfectly see-through back on the back of my phone. I mean, probably wouldn't try that with like an actual good phone, but might be kind of fun to buy a phone for $100 off Craigslist and then try that.
It doesn't even have to be operational.
Exactly.
You could
buy
like a phone that was like literally just sold for parts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I like the idea of seeing inside all the working parts because like if you've ever seen inside a phone, it's kind of crazy in there. You got like you have your battery, you got the camera modules, you got the motherboard. It's interesting stuff. I like it.
I dig it. I remember. We never got to the last question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was the last part of that question?
Do you always use pre-stain? What the hell is pre-stain?
So pre-stain is like a very light polyurethane that you can brush onto your wood that seeps into the pores and closes some of the pores on open grain wood that tends to get a little splotchy. So like your pine. You know how if you stain pine, it's all blotchy and weird?
I just don't work with pine.
Yeah,
and don't stain it. Yeah. Two easy solutions. Don't use pine. Don't use stain.
If you do have a wood that you want to stain, that you're worried about it going splotchy, you can hit it with some pre-stain, and that closes the pores so that the stain goes on evenly. It won't be as intense, so it makes your stain like a little less pigmenty, if you will.
Okay.
But it will make it go on even. So that's kind of the trade-off. I will only ever use pre-stain on pine and like hemlock and really soft woods like that. And then I would just not stain any other type of wood. So
here's my thing. If you want your wood to be dark and look like walnut, just use walnut.
Yeah. Well, I bought I bought the littlest amount of walnut yesterday. It was $350.
Oh, I believe it. I told you for my dining table, it was almost $1,000 of lumber.
Yeah, this was nowhere near a dining table's worth of wood, though. This was like three boards.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. What are you talking, like a 6-7 inch wide board by 8 feet long?
Yeah, it was. I had some 4-quarter stuff. I had some 8-quarter stuff. So that,
yeah,
I believe it. Yeah. The 8-quarter stuff adds up quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you paying per board foot? Like 10 to 12 bucks?
I didn't even look. It's too depressing. I know if I look at the price sheet at the lumberyard, then I won't buy enough wood. I'll try and like cut it as close as I can, and then I'll end up getting too little wood and I'll have to go back. So I just don't look. I play a little mental game with myself where I don't look at the price. I'm like, just get enough.
Isn't it funny that now that you've transitioned to like doing content within reason, you don't even look at the price of like the materials that you're buying to make stuff?
Yes, that's very,
you know
what
I mean?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And like, even like, if I'm going to like buy like little accessories that are going to make the job that much easier, like brushes and stuff like that, I don't even think about it. It's like, okay, Amazon, like send it to the shop right away. Like tax write off.
Yeah. Or like, I was like, oh, I got to buy a dining table. And I was like, I don't know how much wood I need. I'll get all these boards and like, it's walnut. I'll use it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's like having leftover materials is great because it's just stuff for another project. And it's like, well, hopefully I'll make it up on the back end with the AdSense money or a sponsorship.
Well, you
or
know you
like
will.
That. Yeah, yeah.
And
that's
so
the thing.
Like,
I can pretty comfortably count on, you know, X amount of dollars for YouTube or for sponsorships or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's my budget for building for the month, essentially.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, it's nice. It makes you not, it's, I don't know, it's part of, it's like the expense of running a business. It's different than your own money, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's, I feel like it's kind of a jerk saying that, but I mean, like, I guess it's true.
Yeah, it's just, it does happen at a certain point.
At a certain point, some expenses just become irrelevant.
Yes, yes. Especially when you're trying to do something that's time sensitive, like create content, right?
Sure.
If you can save a couple days by spending 25, 50, 100 bucks, you can accelerate your timetable, get your content out that much quicker.
Yeah.
It's almost always worth it. It's, yeah, so.
Like when I bought that Rotex sander, like, dude, I can't tell you how much time that saved me on this dining table.
Yeah.
Sure, it was what, $600? The vacuum was another $800, $900. I bought a bunch of sandpaper. It was $2,000. Sure, that's a lot of money, but dude, it saved me so much time and it's almost like irrelevant.
It's, well, instead of, I don't know, you're kind of re-examining or changing how your relationship with some of these expenses, right? They're not expenses anymore. They're investing in assets for your business.
Yeah. I'm saving myself time by spending money, and I'll do that all day.
And you're also increasing the value of your channel because, again, you're able to create content faster, get more videos out there, get more, you know, pictures, whatever, TikToks out there. And yeah, that makes you more money at the end of the day. So it's like, why wouldn't you spend that $1,800?
I would do that all day. Every day, especially because sanding sucks.
Yes, it does.
All right, let's see. I got one. Oisota. OISOTA.
Okay.
Thoughts on hand tools versus power tools?
Personally, I'm a power tool type of guy.
Yeah.
If I can do it with a power tool, I almost always will. I mean, so there's a point where hand tools make sense. Like today I had to, I cut these squares into a piece of wood using the CNC and I was going to thread some metal rod through it.
Sure.
And I accidentally made the hole like a 64th too small or something like that. So I go to thread the rod through it, it wouldn't fit.
What was that motion again?
Yeah, this.
For anybody who's not watching us on the YouTube live stream, which by the way is how you can listen to the episodes before they get to Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Zach was making a gesture as though he was buttering a cob of ear of corn.
Sexually. Well, if I was dipping a cob of corn into a vat of butter.
Butter. Or maybe churning butter.
Yeah.
In an up and down motion.
Eric, you made me forget what I was saying.
Thoughts on hand tools. You're
Yeah.
So 64th of an inch hole.
Yes, my hole was a 64th of an inch too small. So I didn't go grab the jigsaw. I went and got a little file and filed it, right? So sometimes the precision of a hand tool is worth the added time it takes. But
agreed.
In general, I will almost always default to using a power tool instead of a hand tool.
And so we kind of talked about, well, pretty much almost the whole episode of Chris Giffrow.
Yeah.
He was on episode like seven or something like that.
Yeah.
He was our first guest, right?
Second. I think we did John from Lincoln Street first.
Okay. John was episode five. So Chris was probably like 8, 9, 10 or something like that. But he is a massive hand tool enthusiast. Like he was basically, we had a whole litany of questions like, how does a hand plane work? To give you an idea of how little we know about hand planes.
He rolled his eyes. He was like, oh, these guys.
He thought we were kidding when we asked some of these questions. He's like, oh, no, wait, you're serious. And we're like, yeah. So if you want to know more about hand tools, check out Chris's stuff. Talk to Chris.
Oh, yeah. Chris is great. Check out his YouTube channel especially. He does a lot of in-depth videos on hand tools. It's great.
Oh, I think it is our duty. Neither of us are getting paid a dime for this. We need to shout out the Katzmoses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund.
Yeah, definitely.
So Chris is in charge of that. He's like the
director, or something. Yeah, I want to say director is probably the right term.
But I know JCats just put out a video within the last couple of days or so, kind of highlighting all the different projects that they're doing and all the different ways that you can get involved with it. It's really cool.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it just came out. It's like 7-8 minutes long. Perfect. But definitely, if anyone listening has any interest at all in just, you know, joining an awesome woodworking-related foundation, again, we get zero kickbacks. That's not what this is about. We just, you know, it's awesome to get that out. And it reminded me because of Chris.
They're doing some really great work, and Chris is working hard on it. I know JCats is working hard on it, so go check it out. Give them a little support.
It's sweet. But yeah, hand tools versus power tools. I recognize that there are sometimes, like you said, that hand tools would be super convenient. Like, I know that if I glued up a table and I had just a little, you know, a little bump action, the boards aren't perfectly met up together. I know in my mind that a hand plane would knock that out in no time, right?
Yeah.
But I don't own a hand plane. And for me, it is such like a barrier. I don't know how to use them. I don't know how to sharpen them. Mm-hmm. That truthfully, in my mind, I'm intimidated by it. So I'd rather just sand it.
My thing is the point where I always get turned off of hand tools is kind of what you alluded to there, is the maintenance of them. Somebody's like, oh, you got to take it apart and sharpen it like once a week. It's like, what's a week? I ain't got time for that.
I don't even have, I still have a stack of blades that I've been meaning to take to my, to like the, we got like a sharpening surface.
Yeah.
They've been, that stack of blades has been sitting underneath my workbench for probably 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather just order a new blade off of Amazon, slap it on the saw.
I know. I need to try some of those blades that that JCats always tells people, those like CMT ones or whatever.
Yeah.
I've not tried them. I know we got the same like whatever the industrial red ones are, the
Floyd, the Diablo thing. Ones. Yeah.
Are there the Diablo's like the home center one? These are the industrial ones that are like,
I thought
a little bit more.
I thought Freud owned Diablo.
I think they do, but it's like a different line. I think the lower end line. You have the ones that are probably like $60-$70 a piece.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so those are the industrial ones. Okay, gotcha. You probably can't read it anymore.
Yeah.
On the side.
I have very few saw blades where you can still read the original text.
Buy them in two, though.
Oh, that's smart.
So like I once I finally like clean a blade a couple times and like I'm still like, all right, this sucks. Then I put it in my pile to get sharpened, and then I take one of the other ones out of the brand new or just sharpened pile and then start using those. That blade is starting to get to the point where it needs sharpened too. So I was like, I got to take these in.
You got to start when you take the one and you put it in the bin underneath your bench. You need to write the name from the good one where you can still read the label onto it before you tuck it away.
It's not a bad idea.
That's a level of foresight I would never be able to execute myself, but maybe you're a little smarter than I am, so maybe you can do it.
I feel so lazy, though, like you said. Like, dude, I don't want to go through the hassle of sharpening a blade. I truly would rather just jump online and buy a new one.
Yeah. I know it's wasteful, but again, I find myself time constrained more than anything else in my life right now.
How much is it cost to get your blade sharpened? Like $20, and to buy a new one it's like 75-ish.
Yeah. And then also like I know the blade sharpening place is like 45 minutes away from me, so 45 minutes to drop it off, then you go home, then so there's an hour and a half round trip. They call you up a few days later, hey, your blades are ready, hour and a half back and forth to go get it again.
I'd rather buy a new one.
I
need to look into,
what's that,
are there any of these places where I can just mail my blades?
Maybe, but then even boxing them up, going to the post office, it seems like a lot to me.
See, luckily for me, when I go to the gym, the post office is literally on the road that I take to go to the gym.
Yeah.
So I would have no issue dropping it off. I just, am I ever actually going to do that?
I'm so bad with returns. Like, a couple of times I bought stuff for projects off Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And Amazon's great about taking returns. They'll be like, hey, just, yeah, no problem. Like, put it in a mailbox and send it back to us. But for, like, low-value items, I just can never work up the chutzpah to actually go do it. Like, put it in a box, seal it, put a label on it, take it to the post office, send it out. If it's $20, it's like, I don't know. I'll just hang on to it and hope I need it again in the future.
You know what's funny is I ordered two new pairs of sunglasses online. Mm-hmm. And it's from one of those, like, e-com stores. So it's like, you know, they're like $25-$30 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and they show up. And I'm like, I just don't really like the way they look. But the whole thing was like, oh, you know, we got like free shipping, free returns. So I was like, okay, yep. You know, I'll order them. If I don't like them, I'll just send them back. No problem.
Yep.
Well, I go online and I'm like, all right, I'm going to return them. And I fill out the whole return thing. And they're like, okay, we've processed your return. No need to send them back.
Oh.
My thought is, they spend so little money on these that it probably costs them more money to return it than to just let you keep it and give you your money back.
If you're a big sunglass manufacturer, you're making the sunglasses for $5 a unit or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's going to cost more to have somebody like pick up your box, open it, put it back in inventory.
Yeah.
Even, and you know, then you have to have somebody there inspecting it for damage. You have to have somebody repackaging it. It's honestly not worth it for a low value item. I don't know what the cutoff line would be where it starts to be worth it, but yeah.
I know Amazon does that. Not with everything, but with some stuff. Yeah. Like, you go to try to do it on Amazon, they'll be like, oh, just like send it into UPS. And sometimes they're just like, ah, just keep it.
Yeah. So this happened to me actually. I ordered some polish for my car, like a spray bottle of it.
Yeah,
it arrived and it was broken, so it was leaking a little bit.
Sure.
So I almost, because I'm lazy, I almost just let it ride. I was like, it's not leaking that bad. You know what? Like, I'll just keep it. But I was like, no. If you bought this from a store and it was leaking, you would take it back for return.
Yeah, it was probably like 10 or 15 bucks.
It was more. It was like 30 or something like that. So I go on.
I'd say something.
I go on the chat thing. I go on the automatic system first. I'm like, this item showed up damaged, return. And they're like, okay, no problem. Like, print out a shipping label and send it back to us. And I was like, ugh. So then I go on the live chat and I explain to the person, I was like, hey, this is a liquid in a bottle that got to me cracked. Like, do you really want me to send back a leaking bottle in the mail?
Sure.
And they're like, oh, no, that's ridiculous. Like, here's your money back.
And like instantly just gave you your money back. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Actually, they sent me another bottle of it because I actually needed the stuff. But still, yeah.
Yeah. That's an Amazon, not a hack, I guess. But if people don't know this, if you go on Amazon, scroll to the way, 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 way bottom of the page, and there's like a help or something like that. Click that, and then it'll give you this whole litany of things to click on. But then hit, like, I still need more help. And then you get access to, like, the Amazon, like, you're, like, texting, chatting.
Live agent, I think they call it.
Yeah, live agent, sure. Dude, they'll do, like, anything on that.
Yeah, they're usually very, very good. Although I find that they change the location of it, like, every 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Because I'll get the muscle memory.
If you hunt around, you'll find it.
Yeah, you just have to search around every single time. But yeah, it's handy. You get much better customer service from the live agent than anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. I 100% feel you. There's something I was going to ask. Huh.
It wasn't the meat question, was it?
No. Oh. Well, so I got something for you.
Okay.
Woodworking is fun and all this kind of stuff. Making content's fun. But there's one thing that's absolutely awful about being a woodworker.
What's that? Sanding?
Well, no. But I think, we're at an hour and 4 minutes in.
No way. Really?
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay. Well, let's save this for the after show. The worst thing about being a woodworker. So, okay.
And also the meat question. So you got two teases for the after show in there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I'm a big meat guy. So here's my question that I want to ask you in the after show about the meat. If you had to open up any fast food restaurant.
Got my answer.
What would it be?
Easy. Easy.
Okay. Okay.
Not a problem.
So if you're a big meat guy or girl, and you want to know the worst thing about being a woodworker, we are going to head over to the after show where you get another, you know, half hour to an hour of additional podcasting content. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we talk about some spicy stuff, throw some people mm-hmm. under the bus,
mm-hmm.
tell you which brands to avoid, which tools to avoid.
True. You get our real honest opinions about tool brands and product brands. And yeah, it's fun.
Advertisers that we hate working with.
Exactly.
And things we regret.
A lot of people under the bus.
Yeah. I feel like that's mostly after show. I'd be like, you know what drives me nuts?
Yeah. This damn company.
Oh, they're the worst. But I got the bus warmed up. What do you say we head over to the after show?
Sounds good. Hop in that Greyhound.
Oh, yeah. I'm popping in a movie. Maybe Bug's Life. We can watch Bug's Life on the way to the after show. Not Bug's Life 2, the original one.
The original, yeah, all clearly.
Right. Everybody, we will see you over at the after show. And we'll say that because all of you are going to go to the after show. But if you don't, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. See you, everybody.
See you.